Hello, and welcome to Lecture 23. I hope you have been enjoying this lecture series and the topics that we have covered. Thanks to the questions you asked, the fabric of the Hands Full program is being woven into a protocol that many of you will enjoy implementing, both for your children with special needs and for your children who are developing typically. I'd like to take another opportunity to thank Hamaspic in general, and Nishmosaini in particular, for keeping this line going so that you can learn the Hands Full Behavior Management Program and everything that comes along with it. So let's review a little. Where are we up to in our mastery of the Hands Full Program? What have we learned? Firstly, it's important to know that the Hands Full Program is divided into two volumes, so to speak. Volume 1 is for children ages 0 to 10, and Volume 2 is for children ages 10 to 18. Regardless of which age group you will be using the Hands Full program for, the program is built on the same three tiers. We call each tier a phase, and under normal circumstances, each tier lasts for a minimum of 6 weeks. You have already learned the connection between 6 weeks and the 40 days of our Misora. During the first and most important phase, we focus on children's ability to handle when things don't go their way. This skill, known as frustration tolerance, is the most foundational of human skills upon which every component of Menschlichkeit and positive behavior is built. Once a child has mastered the ability to tolerate frustration, he is actually free to be happy during the rest of what life brings, whether desired or not. This leads into phase two, during which most children become obedient after they have learned to tolerate the discomfort of not necessarily getting what they want. Because after all, obedience to a mother, a father, a teacher, a Rebbe, a Manal, or even the Ribbono Shel Olam requires a certain level of discomfort. Just to be sure this is clear, obedience means when we do something that we don't particularly want to do because someone bigger than we are, smarter than we are, who knows better than we do what's good for us, told us to. So often when I ask clients or students if their child obeys them and they respond when he wants to, what does that really tell me? That this child doesn't obey. Because when a child does what a parent wants at a time when the parent and the child happen to want the same thing, that's mazel. That's not obedience. The understanding of the importance of children learning to tolerate when things don't go their way is critical and is the only prerequisite to true obedience, and from there, impulse control and ultimate happiness. Just today, I was exiting a grocery store with my purchases, and on my way out, I noticed a father with a young child that appeared to be about 2 years old. The father was unsuccessfully attempting to get this crying child to sit in a shopping cart, but he was unable to. No matter how hard he tried, the child arched his back, threw himself in every direction, practically jumping out of the father's arms, yelling, screaming, crying. This poor father kept looking around him, obviously worrying about what others were going to think of him. He was helpless, stuck in front of a store, among customers rushing in and out, paralyzed and unable to proceed. Finally, he put the child down. The child began to run toward the parking lot. And the father said in a kind and gentle voice, "Shefala, we don't run in the street. Do you want Tati to buy you a fancy drink?" This store had a counter with fresh food preparation and some freshly made drinks. Let me tell you something. If a two-year-old runs in a parking lot, you don't stop to Shefala. You grab that kid out of the parking lot. The child totally didn't respond to the parent. All he wanted to do was to get away from that shopping cart. At this point, I had passed this young man and was no longer able to observe the goings-on without staring. End of story. But I, who see the long-term damage of these parent mistakes, 10, 12, sometimes 15 years after these mistakes are made, left a piece of my heart there in front of the store. So based on this episode, it wouldn't be difficult to surmise that this child, this two-year-old, had not had any previous experience not getting what he wanted. Because most children age 2 learn pretty quickly. So if this child had experienced not getting what he wants at home, Chances are he would have been more familiar with the concept of sitting in a shopping cart even if he didn't want to, and would have settled down after a quick squawk or two. That would have been a lucky kid who is on his way to emotional health, balance, and will ultimately be able to handle life's ups and downs. So the idea is to INB, ignore negative behavior, all those precious tantrums that occur in the privacy of your home, get them over with, so that your child will be able to handle not getting a snack or having to sit in a shopping cart in public. It's a process. It takes some teaching. Now this poor man was powerless. He was stuck. He had absolutely no idea what to do. My heart broke for him, but it broke even more for the child. So you're probably thinking, what would I have done in such a situation? What should this father have done? Well, there were two choices. Choice A, make one or maximum two attempts to A, find a shopping cart with a safety belt, and B, place the child's legs in the appropriate place in the shopping cart. If you manage to get the child into the shopping cart, strap the child in, move on quickly into the store. Don't be embarrassed because your child is crying. Get what you need to and get out of there. If you ignore the crying will stop within minutes, especially at that age. And you will have gained mileage, footage, whatever you want to call it, for the next episode. A few such repeated episodes and the child will know, my mother or father is not afraid of my crying in public. So this child will drop that weapon. But what about our father from today? What about him? His child was fighting really hard. I saw. He could not manage to get this child into the cart. He couldn't. I'll tell you that. The kid was kicking and screaming and arching all over the place. So then what? So then there's only one choice. It's not a perfect choice, but it's better than giving in to the child and letting him walk or run around the store when you already made attempts at putting the child in the shopping cart. The only solution is to go home. Yes, I know the child might think that he successfully exercised control over the parent in that the parent couldn't manage the shopping. I know that. But although it's not a perfect option, it's still better than if the child directly and overtly gets his way and is allowed to walk or run around the store after the parent had clearly said, I want you to sit in the shopping cart. Yes, I know that our fellow needed his groceries. Yes, I know that he would have to face his wife and tell her he couldn't manage the simple errand. Hey, his wife might have just had a new baby. His wife might be home with a newborn and had asked him to pick up bottles and newborn diapers. What do I know? No matter what, I challenge this adult who is mature and clever enough to become a father to figure out a solution to get whatever it was he or his wife needed without compromising on his child's overall chinuch. Because repeated compromises of a child's chinuch add up. They don't get erased. They get stored in the child's psyche and contribute to what this two-year-old will ultimately become. Fascinatingly enough, most people don't even try to think of another solution. They give up and give the two-year-old what he wants. They say to me, I had no choice. I decided it wasn't worth the fight. Really now? Your child's ultimate personality is not worth a moment of discomfort? Sure it is. All you have to do is think. And I find that when people actually stop and think, they come up with solutions. Does this guy have a mother who could help? A sister who could help? A niece? A neighbor? Could he have done a quick drop-off somewhere and run to the grocery for this stuff? Could the items have waited until after bedtime? And could he have gone out for the items later? I'm not saying there is always a solution, but do people even try to think of one? In other words, do people put the lessons that a child can and need to learn from an episode like this on the top of their list of priorities or on the bottom? Or, alternatively, a well-trained parent would know to think in advance before trying to put the child in the cart. The parent would think first, on his toes, up front. He would think as follows. Am I 100% sure that my child will go into the shopping cart when I tell him to? No? Oh, then I shouldn't be trying to put him in the shopping cart to begin with. If I'm so desperate for the container of milk or the Pampers, and I want to keep the chinuch of my child in mind at the same time, why does my child have to even know that I'd rather he sit in the cart? Why do I have to be so transparent? Let me just walk with him into the store, grab what I need, and get out of there. Then that would be fine because the child has no idea that he got his way because I will not have even begun to pick this battle. Great preemptive thinking. Amazing. The key is to think in advance and anticipate. But once you already made the move to attempt to put the child in the shopping cart and the child begins to fight you, whoops, then you're stuck. Believe me, I understand. There are other pressures in our adult lives other than chinuch of children. There's shalom bayis, there's health, there's parnasa, and there's all types of other stresses. Difficulties come and go. But the chinuch of our children stretches far, far into the future, far beyond our own lifespans. And what you do for the sake of your children, you're also doing for the sake of your grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and for the sake of the future of Klal Yisrael. So for the sake of this cute little two-year-old, who is going to need to tolerate discomfort for the sake of his own marriage, his own children, and for his rabbeim, rosh yeshivas, and ultimately for the Rabban Shalom, it is critically important that he learn to sit in a shopping cart on a random Wednesday afternoon, even if he doesn't want to. Okay, so you get my point. Now back to the structure of the Hands Full program. The program, as you know, has three phases. Phase one, frustration tolerance and tolerating when things don't go your way. Phase two, obedience, which sits on top of frustration tolerance. And once a child becomes accustomed to obeying authority figures as needed, he will learn not to live his life impulsively and will be able to measure his actions based on what's correct rather than on what he wants. So that leads us automatically to the final phase, phase three, which is impulse control. One of the important components that differentiate man from other creatures is impulse control. That's the beautiful part of the Bria known as Bechira, which allows us, with loads of hard work and tons of investment by our parents, to choose Uvacharta Bechayim. So does it matter if our two-year-old sits in the shopping cart? It certainly does. Is it worth the battle? It certainly is. So the Hands Full program walks parents through the three phases and helps children graduate from one phase to another. For children ages 0 to approximately 9 or 10, the phases and their matching strategies look like this. Phase 1, whose goal is that a child learn frustration tolerance. The strategies are ignore negative behavior, INB, separate without comment, SWC, and missions. Phase 2, whose goal is that a child master obedience to an authority. The strategy is HOH or hand over hand. Phase 3, whose goal is that a child learn to regulate themselves and control their impulses. The strategy is timeout. If you don't recognize the names of these strategies, it's kedai to go back to the beginning of this lecture series and listen to the lectures in the order that they were recorded and posted. Now let's talk about teenagers. The phases and their goals are the same. After all, we want our teens to also learn to phase 1, tolerate frustration. Phase 2, obey authority. And phase 3, control their impulses. That's all a tall order. But if mastered one phase at a time, this is all doable. Although the goals and phases for teenagers remain the same, the strategies that we use for teens are slightly different, a more mature version. The strategies look like this. For phase 1, ignore negative behaviors and missions. Notice the omission of SWC from the teenage protocol because we're not about to take an item away from a teenager. It's simply not age appropriate. Bear in mind, though, that in the cases of teens who are not developing typically, it is sometimes acceptable to use the 0 to 10 strategy as long as they match the teen's developmental level. There are also some versions of SWC that are appropriate in the case of a teenager who is developing normally, for example, separating other children from a teen sibling who is harassing them. Missions are super effective in teen chinuch because it allows the teen to maintain dignity when they obey a mission, even though we don't expect it, and doesn't allow them to directly disobey us. Yet, somewhere along the way, it's important to get to phase 2, the obedience phase, even with a teen, because, as you already heard, obedience is a key component to Yiddisha, appropriate way of life. The strategy that matches the obedience goal of phase two for teenagers is called Nothing Until. You have not heard me speak about Nothing Until, so this strategy is unfamiliar to you unless you have read or listened to it in one of the Handsful products. Nothing Until is simple and extremely effective. You pick one command, a simple command, a command that is not time sensitive, and you can live very well without it done. Remember, this is a drill. It's all about the obedience. So you don't want to be practicing such a drill on something that is going to raise your blood pressure. An example of something that is not time sensitive is asking a teen to please fold a load of towels that have been taken out of the dryer. Simply state the command in command form, "Suri, please fold the towels and put them away in the linen closet." Then get on with your business. My expectation is that the teen will either ignore your command, tell you that they will do the command soon or later, or refuse to do the command. In any of these cases, you simply get on with your life. Remember, you don't really care about the towels. At some point, your teen will approach you to ask or tell you something positive, something negative, something neutral, that is either related or not related to the towels. At that time, you may respond with four words. The first three of the four words are always consistent. They are nothing until the. And the fourth word is the one-word description of the command that had been issued. In this case, the fourth word would be towels. So you would say nothing until the towels. Now, your teen may do the towels, refuse to do the towels, or attitude her way through the towels. Either way, the rule remains as follows. For the next few hours, until the towels get done, every time the teen approaches you, you repeat the same four words. Nothing until the towels. At some point, the towels will get done. If, after a few hours, the towels are still not done and the day is over, you may do the towels yourself. The next morning, when your teen speaks to you, say the following. "It is not good for us not to talk, so I took care of the towels. We will try again another time." Notice the use of the word "we." Basically, what you are implying is that the "we" indicates the formation of a healthy relationship between parent and child. And a healthy relationship between parent and child does involve obedience. When you start Nothing Until, use one command per day, and the rest missions. Eventually, you can graduate to two commands per day. If your teen resists Nothing Until with an overload of chutzpah or absolutely digs in his or her heels and refuses to do the command, scale back to one command every 2 or 3 days. Eventually, your child will begin to obey a Nothing Until command. There are those who ask me, when is the correct age to transition from hand over hand, HOH, which is the obedience strategy of phase two for children, to Nothing Until, which is the obedience strategy for phase two for teens. In the case of normally developing children, that age is somewhere between 8 and 10. The variables that should be considered are the child's behavioral history, weight, size, maturity level. All of these factors should help you decide whether hand over hand is appropriate for your child's age or whether or not you should graduate to Nothing Until. Do your best to use hand over hand for as long as possible and as long as it's appropriate, up until the 9th or 10th birthday. Remember, hand over hand is a nonverbal, wonderful conditioning tool which will plant obedience deep into your child's behavioral programming and yield beautiful behavioral health. If your child is over the age of 8 and resists hand over hand to the point that you think it's not safe or appropriate, then you may switch to Nothing Until. Although Nothing Until is a wonderful teen strategy, nothing beats the conditioning aspect of HOH on young children, so do your best to squeeze the obedience stage into children as soon as possible in their lives. So hatzlacha, deciding which strategy to use. Hatzlacha with HOH. Hatzlacha with Nothing Until. And hatzlacha remembering that no matter at what age, obedience is a skill that can only be taught if frustration tolerance has been mastered. Have a wonderful week.